Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Fantasy Force podcast. I'm back at it again with John Laub, Gridiron Schol 91, S-C-H-O-L 91 on Twitter. John, how's it going today?
Oh, it's doing great. Back-to-back nights with my friend Andrew to talk about the NFL draft. Got a little DFS baseball I'm watching, so I put that aside, and I'm ready to chat with you all night.
Man, this is perfect. The last episode, I go back and I listen to make sure everything sounds good, that, you know, the few edits that I do make sound, you know, well, and they work in well. I had such a good time listening to you talk about some of these prospects. I was so excited to get back at it again today.
Oh, me too. I've been working all day on refreshing my notes, doing a little more research. I enjoyed last night tremendously, and hopefully so did our listeners, and we'll do it again for them.
Absolutely. And I have it as that pinned tweet right up top. We ran a mock draft, and it finished up this weekend, this past weekend. Just a four-round dynasty mock so people can see, some of their favorite writers are taking and who they like at different spots in the draft. And I want to talk to you today about your draft, because I think you really worked this. These were great, and I was sitting one pick behind you. You were at the 107, I was at 108. So I was very attentive when you were on the clock, because I said, I know John's going to be looking at a lot of the people I'm looking at. So, it happened, and we'll get to it in the fourth round, that you took one of the guys I really wanted to take a shot on. But starting out, the 107, obviously, you know, most of the big wide receivers are off the board. Treadwell, Doxson, Shepard, Coleman, and obviously Zeke and Henry were taken as well. So you went with Kenneth Dixon, running back out of Louisiana Tech. And I spoke about him earlier with Chris back on the first episode of this new season. But what do you like about Dixon on the field?
So first, it was a hard decision for me at 7. I really was debating between Leonte Carew and Kenneth Dixon. So I decided, when I'm in such a scenario when I like two players a real lot, I usually am going to go with the player who I believe will get most snaps on the field immediately. And to me, Kenneth Dixon is a three-down back. So I decided to go with the running back there, and I actually felt that once you get past the top three at wide receiver, there's a lot of depth that you can dip into. But I really have Dixon rated number 2 among my backs. So I went with Dixon. I could see why someone would take Leonte Carew there, but I decided to go with the running back. What do I like about him? Nearly everything. And it's not an exaggeration. He was an incredibly productive runner at Louisiana Tech. First of all, he was a workhorse who dominated the Conference USA during his career. And Andrew, at the end of his four seasons on campus, he produced 5,452 yards, and he scored 87 touchdowns. I mean, he's getting yards on the ground and in the air. I like that. And one of the things I loved was, as a freshman, he scored 27 times. And he continued to put the ball in the end zone throughout his 4 years on campus. And when the dust finally settled on his career and he walked off the stage, he was the all-time leading rusher with the Bulldogs. So I loved him in college fantasy football last year, and I loved watching him throughout his career. So then I had to go through the film to make sure that my eyeballs and the film matched up. He is a slashing ball carrier through the hole. I really like how he gets through the hole there. He's elusive, and he makes tacklers miss. Louisiana Tech did not have a very good offensive line. They were not blowing holes open for him. So he had to make something out of nothing. He easily changes direction with quick feet, and he has a great feel for working between the tackles. So I like these college players who take the ball and they run it between the tackles. A lot of times with college players, what you will see is they will try to rely on their athleticism, and they'll try to take the ball outside and beat the defenders to the corner to hit it upfield. Dixon is willing to run through those tackles and hit the defenders and take what he can with those 3-4 yards at a time. So I love that. But really what made him special from a fantasy standpoint, and especially with the rise of PPR leagues across the nation, is he is a true dual threat runner. Mm-hmm. He runs very good routes. He's actually lined up in the slot at times. And he has terrific soft hands. So I believe that offensive coordinators will get him on the field as soon as possible, even if he ends up in a running back by committee situation. He will get snaps because he can catch the football and he can create mismatches. Now, there is some concern. There's a lot of wear and tear on that body. It would have been nice if he left after 3 years on campus, but he stayed for his senior season, and that's okay. But I like his body. He's 5'10 and 215 pounds. When you saw him on film, I wasn't sure that he was going to be over 200 pounds. This is a lean, strong player. Mm-hmm. But I like that he's got that extra weight on him than I anticipated. And 5'10 is a good height. He can hide behind those massive tackles and might be able to squirm away from some defensive linemen. And at times he dances seeking a crease. But I think that might be a byproduct of a terrible offensive line when he's just trying to escape defenders who are on him immediately. I liked his combine. He came there and he had a good combine and he impressed people. So I'm all in on Kenneth Dixon. I have him rated as number 2 in my rankings right now in Dynasty ahead of Derrick Henry. I think he's going to have a very productive 3 to 4 year window. And I can't project any back, even an Ezekiel Elliott. I can't go beyond 4 years. The average runner, if they make it 3 years in the NFL, is outstanding. So despite the wear and tear, I'll take the chance with Kenneth Dixon.
Right, absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head on so much there. I'll just add that I do like Dixon. I do like what he can bring to the passing game for whatever team ends up drafting him. He is also a pretty stout runner, and you're right that he doesn't look 215 when you look at him on the field, but he does invite contact. Even he has that kind of skinny or more lean, his legs, they just don't pop like some of the other NFL running backs do. But he's not afraid of contact. He doesn't shy away from it. He even does well, with his yards after contact, but... sometimes running style is so big, and I love Dixon's running style. That jump cut style, he's already pretty decisive as a runner, and you said, his offensive line, not great. So, being decisive when you have a bad offensive line is still a really strong, positive for a guy, because it means when you have, one or two competent blockers on one side of the line, you can really just burst through and you can turn a 1 or a 2 yard gain into a 4 yard gain. And that's monumental for any running back, much less a rookie.
Absolutely. Remember when we were talking yesterday about adversity? I like that this mm-hmm. kid had to play through a little adversity where he was the best player on his team and the surrounding talent did not necessarily let him showcase what an amazing player he was all the time. And he still put some eye-popping runs on tape that you see. So I really do believe he's ready for the challenge of the NFL.
Right. And we're starting to hear more and more about a guy's market share in his offense. How many or what percentage of his offense is he responsible for? I'm still undecided as to whether or not I think that's a valuable metric and where are the best scenarios to look at it and try and gain something from that. But I think in these situations, a guy who is clearly the best talent on his team, if the defensive coordinator for the opposing team knows the ball is going to you in a lot of situations, they are game planning for that. They're having a linebacker look down at you through the snap to see what you're going to do. They're having maybe an extra safety read you, or they're telling a defensive end to keep an eye on you as well. It's so hard to be the guy for your team and still crank out those yards. So you're absolutely right. And that's something I'm going to start looking at more and more. And I think it's something everyone should, is these guys that do have to battle through that type of adversity on the field.
Absolutely. I think it's tremendously important, especially some of the big time backs from the big programs had such great offensive lines in front of them, and the scores got out of hand quickly. So you don't see that adversity on tape, and I like that a lot.
Absolutely, and that's something definitely I'll be touching on more and more as I dive into CJ Procise a bit, because he is one of my favorites, but he has a lot of future NFL starters in front of him on that Notre Dame line. So,
and some talent at the wide receiver. Yeah, he had a very good teammates everywhere.
Absolutely. So, you know, you were able to snag, Dixon in the first. You came back in the second, and you were able to get Paul Perkins, another guy I'm quite fond of, and I love where he fell, because he's so talented. To see him go in the middle of the second, I'm not going against anyone else's strategy, because everyone has players they really like, and I was shocked he fell this far. And when he was going that far down, in my mind I had planned to grab a receiver, because I went Procise in the first round. But if Perkins was on the board, he was probably going to get a serious look at 208 for me. So I appreciate you snatching him at 207 and making my decision a little easier.
Thank you. But I will honestly say I like to go into a draft with a plan. And my plan was to really snag a wide receiver who I liked in the second round. And what happened is three wide receivers went right off the board immediately who I liked.
Yeah.
My first one I really liked more than most people is Tyler Boyd, mm-hmm. but he went 2-2. So I said, okay, Malcolm Mitchell, I was willing to take a chance in. I like him, his upside, but he went 2-1. And the guy who I really wanted to target would have been Mike Thomas out of Southern Mississippi. So he went 2-3. So once the three wide receivers who I really was looking at were off the board, I said, wow, I better be ready here to zig when I really wanted to zag. And sorry for the bad cliche. So hey, then I said, okay, where's the value on the board? I was pretty content that all the wide receivers remain at this point, depending on who you like, depending on which websites people were looking at. I figured I could get a wide receiver I like in round three. So I said, you know what I'm going to do? There's value at the running back position. And I do like Paul Perkins a ton. I have him at number 5 on my rankings. And I said, you know what? Let me monopolize two tremendous pass-catching running backs. Let me have two of these. And now I have chips. If both of them are as good as I believe at catching the ball out of the backfield, maybe I have a chip somewheres in the middle of the season or next off season where I can trade one of these pass catchers for another piece of my roster down the road, because I'm really taking what I perceive to be the two best pass catchers. Now, I do like Procise, but that's a different conversation for a different day. I like Perkins and Dixon better. So I said, let me get Perkins. And this is what I like about him. When you watch him, he has top-notch vision with elusiveness, toughness, and shiftiness. Sure, you would like him to be a little bit bigger. He's 5'10", 208. I would love for him to have that extra 7 to 12 pounds, but I'm okay with 2'7". I like that compact body on him. He is very patient when he has the ball, and he really does find the holes and the creases in the defense. But the part that is the best is clearly he is a three-down back with soft hands and good hand-eye coordination. You could put him in motion. You could line him up in the slot. You can send him down the crease if you are really creative, and you can get a mismatch, and maybe the safety goes to double-team your X receiver out wide. So I think you can do a lot of things with this guy, and you see some tape with Perkins. He does make some pretty amazing catches. Now, I had also watched him a ton in college. As a sophomore in 2014, he led the Pac-12 in rushing with over 1,500 yards. And last year with a freshman quarterback in Josh Rosen, who had a good season, But you know the defense is going to key on Paul Perkins. That is going to be their number one mission, is to take Perkins out of the offense. He still ended up rambling for 1,343 yards. So I really like that. He helped his rookie quarterback out, and he was able to produce against those stacked defenses. And at the end of his tenure on campus, he was the all-time receiver at running back for the Bruins, catching 80 passes in 39 games. So he's averaging barely over two catches a game. But if you look, most of those came in the last two seasons, not his first. Mm-hmm. Now, there is concern, which I get. He has a lean frame and thin legs, but I do think he plays bigger than his body illustrates. It would be great to see him add a little bit of strength. He's not a great short yardage runner right now, but you could put him in the red zone and you could put him out to receive a pass and run a pattern. So I like that. And I think at the end of the day, the sum of all the parts of Paul Perkins are better than any one individual skill. So I have him in my top five. He's number five. And I like the fact that I was able to get two dual threat running backs who I have in the top five in a dynasty league.
Absolutely. And again, just, you know, picking up everything, I would just add that he, you know, it's something that we see sometimes that prevents a lot of these rookie running backs from seeing the field is their, you know, not even necessarily prowess, but their understanding of blocking concepts. And that is something that I think Perkins does very well. He's not, you know, a fullback level in pass protection, but he is a solid pass protector. You could keep him in there without worrying about the quarterback, you know, being crushed from his blind side. So, you know, the willingness to do those things on the field will keep you out there. You don't necessarily have to come off when it's third down for either someone who can blitz or maybe, you know, they can stick a smaller wide receiver in the backfield to come out. I love those things, the little things that guys can do to stay on the field.
I agree with you totally, and the coaching staff and the offense coordinator were also very much like that. So I agree with you. I think he's going to get on the field rather quickly in the right team, in the right scheme.
Exactly. And it's interesting you mentioned the right scheme. So his combine was as expected, which I think is, again, we talk a lot about whether or not the combine is overblown. I just think the combine either has to match up with what you see on the field, or, you know, if someone happens to outperform what they do, what are they not doing on the field that they need to start, you know, switching into? So Perkins was as expected. He ran a 4.5, 32-inch vertical. His broad jump was pretty good, though, so I like the explosiveness there, and that's certainly evident in his running style. He is, you know, he's one of those old Mike Shanahan type backs. Just one cut and get upfield. No dancing, you know, no doing too much in the hole. Just make your cut and try and get north.
I agree with you, and he's really good also when he catches the ball in the flat to make that first linebacker or the first defender to miss. And if that tackler misses, Perkins can take it to the house.
Absolutely. I think a year or so in an NFL system, you know, I love to look at kind of the athletes these guys are as rookies, and then what do they become in their second year? Because I think adjusting to the speed and kind of realizing that you've made it, you've hit the goal you've been working for how many years, so now you have to start competing at this level. I think the guys get a lot more athletic heading into things. I love the rookie combine, but we don't get to see anything like that for second year guys to see how much they've improved. I think Perkins has a huge chance to improve because I think he'll see the field pretty early on in his rookie career. So I think his athleticism will pick up a little more than it is now. And I think you can see him sort of being maybe a little a slightly faster, more decisive Duke Johnson on the field. That seems to be what I would love him to be. Yeah, I don't want to say he's, I wouldn't project him as like a Jamal Charles type guy, but he does that. Charles is, again, he's a big, he's a one cut and get up field. You know, for as much as he as much as he's able to do on the outside, he can run in between the tackles. You see that with Perkins too. Even with the smaller lower half of his body, he still runs between the tackles. He still gets those tough yards, and he still does it on the outsides as well.
I totally agree. I would have, you know, he would be perfect for a situation in which maybe he sits and learns for a year. And I was thinking he would be a perfect Kansas City Chief underneath Andy Reid, play behind Charles, who probably is near the end of his career. And then you just plug Perkins into that Chiefs offensive machine that Reid has put together. He might be perfect in a scheme like that.
Absolutely. And that was something I heard. I spoke about with Chris that, you know, maybe since the running back position has been so devalued recently in the league, and I assume that's going to turn around sooner or later, but I think a small slide on draft day can actually really help his dynasty value. He can hit with a better team. It's not like, you know, you can see like a Zeke Elliott, like he's going to one of the top teams in the draft, which means he's going to a team that didn't finish out the season so well. And while he could be the difference maker, he could also be surrounded by, let's say, some lackluster talent. And some of these guys that go later have a chance of hitting with, you know, the Patriots or, you know, hitting with one of the top guys. He could even be, you know, someone that maybe if the Broncos are looking to add another camp body, I think he could bring something that, you know, neither Anderson nor Hillman bring to the game either.
I agree with you. He would be a perfect Bronco, but I don't know now that they signed Hillman and they got CJ.
Yeah, that's right. They threw a lot of money at Anderson.
To see where they go.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Perkins is definitely someone whose value can either really balloon or it can either really deflate based on where he lands on draft day.
Absolutely.
All right, so we move. You made my decision to take Sherrone Peak pretty easy. And I want to thank you and Adam, who took Malcolm Mitchell, and Lisa London, who took Tajay Sharpe. You guys all made that very easy on me. That was great. The second round, which I thought was going to be a bit of a headache, got really simplified by the time it got to me.
Isn't that weird how when you're doing one of these drafts, you get like four guys you like, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, you're like, wait a second, they're all gone.
You know what? I do love that about this. I don't know if I've said this on an actual podcast, but the thing I love so much about these mocks where we can get a bunch of writers together is, you know, everyone kind of has to stick to their guys on these things. And this is a great draft class for that, because you can find guys that you really like at every level here. So it's fun to see a guy like when Lisa took Sharp off the board at 204. I thought I might have a shot at him in the third, almost certainly with the 208. So when he was gone, I said, you know what? This is great. This is exactly what I wanted out of this. People are sticking to the people they like. You don't want someone you like to fall past you. So seeing these things are perfect.
One thing that you said is what I believe is very important when you're providing information. I think when the expert is partaking in anything like this, and I shouldn't even call me it, whenever a fantasy diehard or anyone who loves this game, I try to stay true to the analysis and the opinions that I am providing so that people see that I'm not saying one thing and doing the other. If I say I like a player or I rank him higher, I'm going to do everything I can reasonably do to be able to acquire him. And it's the same thing when I play in experts leagues or do any mock draft. I always stay as close to my board as possible so that if people are following me, they can really get a good idea of who I like. Now, they may disagree and go another direction, and that's totally cool. That's why I love this hobby. But the best part is I'm going to tell you these are the players I like, and I'm going to show you through drafts and through podcasts and magazines that these are the players I'm going to go for. If you agree with me, that's awesome. If not, that's cool too. But I'm not going to like vary and have 19 different drafts. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I love seeing that. I love seeing the consistency out of guys. So that's something I really enjoy seeing. And I find out who I really like when I can read a guy, you know, write something positive about a player and then take him in a mock maybe a little earlier than where he would have gone.
Yes. I like doing that if you know other people you're drafting with love someone maybe, and you like them, and you're in a toss-up, and you're like, I'm going to take the guy he likes.
Exactly.
See what he does now.
Exactly. Always good to gauge reactions of league mates.
Yes.
All right. I want to go to the third round now, because this is one of the guys I was looking at as things came to me, and I was so certain I was going to get him that when he came off the board, I was immediately scrambling. I had no idea what I was doing in that moment, because once I saw this name come up, I was shocked. I said, oh no, I have no idea. I didn't have a backup in case, because I was trying to get picks in pretty quick to keep things moving along. I had a decent idea of you know, certain guys I wanted. And as Kiaris Garrett, wide receiver out of Tulsa, just kept going down in the third, we saw Braxton Miller get taken. We saw Rashard Higgins, Jordan Payton, Jared Goff. They all came off the board in the third round. I'm thinking, great, I have Garrett. This is going to be great. I can talk about, you know, the size that he's going to bring to the NFL, you know, how the long legs can really help him on the field. And of course, you nab him at 307. So, you know, outside of the frame, which obviously he comes NFL ready, 6'3", 220, just a prepackaged wide receiver you can throw on the field. What does he do that you think is going to translate really well to the pros?
All right, so before I answer that, I'll digress. I was having a good sweat waiting for my pick in the third round because I gambled that Kiaris Garrett would be there for me. When I took Perkins, Garrett was by far my favorite receiver remaining on the board. Now, I knew there was no way Perkins would come back to me at the third round. But I said, you know, I might have a chance with Kiaris Garrett. And sure enough, he lasted. But it was a good sweat. I was waiting. So what do I love about him? One, he's a long strider. He stretches the field despite an elite stopwatch speed. He attacks defenders. He gets on top of them. So he can get deep. But like you said, he's a big-bodied playmaker with impressive initial quickness, good body control, and big, broad shoulders. When you see him on film, you're like, wow, this is a really big kid. He's also an underrated hands catcher. He has long arms and sticky hands, and he can snatch the pigskin all over his catch radius. So if the quarterback's just throwing it anywhere's in a reasonable perimeter of him, he's going to be able to get it. He also plays the game a little bit like a power forward. He boxes out opponents, and he uses that large catch radius to attack the football, just like a rebounder like Dennis Rodman going to the glass. So I really like him. Now, he led the FBS last year with 1,588 yards on 96 receptions. So I had seen a lot of film. I had watched him play last year at Tulsa. I really liked him. The combine was a little bit, I was hoping for a little bit numbers, better numbers at the combine, but they weren't bad for a man his size. So sometimes when you look at raw combine numbers, you got to understand that this is not a sterling sharp body we're talking about. This is a big man who, you know, if he had another 25 pounds, you'd probably put him at tight end. You know, so when you look at the numbers and you put it into perspective and context of a guy who's 6'3", 220, the numbers look a little bit better. Now, there are clearly some concerns. He came from Tulsa, and Montgomery, the coach, is a Baylor disciple. So his route tree is a little bit limited when you watch him. He basically mastered three great routes, and he ran those the majority of the time. So he's going to have some coaching to be able to read the defenses, maybe expand on his route tree. I don't think you're going to have too many NFL receivers who become stars running three routes. I would like to see it at like five routes. It's kind of like a starting pitcher. You can make it with three pitches, but you prefer the fourth pitch. And I think for a receiver, you'd like to be able to have at least a mastery of five routes on the tree at this level. And the one thing that's weird, when you watch him, he doesn't get a lot of yak yardage. For some reason, for a big man, he goes down rather easily. But it's not like defenders were hitting him in the upper body. He went down a lot of times on almost like a shoestring. The cornerback or the safety would go low, and he would just go down rather easily. So you'd like to see him be able to pick up more yak yardage as a fantasy owner. But I think the long-term upside in a dynasty league is very, very positive. I really love this. I would love to see him get to Detroit. I think he's the type of guy, when you have a Golden Tate and then you have a Marvin Jones, you have an Eric Ebron. If you went to a four-receiver set, but you put Ebron and Garrett in the slot, and basically you told Garrett, on this play, you're running one route. We designed it. If the safety's there, we're not going to throw it to you. If the safety goes double up on Ebron or one of the outside receivers, then we're going to look for you to win the one-on-one. Keep the route running simple as a rookie. He provides a unique asset to a team, and the Lions don't have that big body receiver. So that's the type of team I would love to see him. He doesn't have to be the alpha dog from day one of camp, but he can grow into becoming a really good NFL player. So I was very happy to get Garrett in the third round.
Right, right. And the Lions are an interesting spot for him. I think he would also do pretty well. And just because I know this is the type of guy he's wanted to have since he was with the Jets. But, you know, Rex Ryan and the Bills, I think he would make a nice complement across from Sammy Watkins. I don't know if he could be the number two immediately to start his career, but I think he can kind of morph into that role. A nice big-bodied guy. I will say, for as big as he is, you know, contested catches are a bit of an issue with him. He doesn't come down with as many as you'd like, and certainly it's unfair to compare as many big receivers to Calvin Johnson as possible. I don't need that out of every guy that's, you know, over 6'1". But I feel like I would like Garrett to work on that a little more. And I guess that goes along with the yak comments as well. If he can just kind of brush off a corner or a safety just a bit easier, whether that's adding a little bit to, you know, his legs, you know, whether it's, you know, developing a small way to shake them right before they make contact, those little things can really turn a guy from, you know, a potential starter at some point in his career to a sure thing.
Absolutely. I mean, if he could take one of his weaknesses and if he could turn it into a strength, he might really take off as an NFL receiver. But that's why I have him ranked at number 11. Mm-hmm. When, you know, he's not that elite prospect, but you rank him at number 11 because you say with the right coaching in the right system, he could really develop into a nice NFL player who might be able to get, you know, 80 catches, maybe tops out at 1,100 yards, and in a best-case scenario, scores 8 touchdowns a year. You know, that nice ceiling if he works hard and everything goes right for him in his career. But I like that. I like that kind of risk on a receiver who I have ranked number 11 for dynasty owners.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's important to note, these are third-round picks, so we've run out of the guys that aren't showing a whole lot of weaknesses on the field. So you really do have to take a lot of this and just measure, you know, where's the floor for this guy? Where's the ceiling for him? What's his potential to actually reach the ceiling? There's a lot that goes into these picks. And I think, you know, at the 307, Garrett is definitely, you know, the guy I would have gone with if he would have fallen to me. I ended up going with Byron Marshall to show how little of a plan I have. I love the guy as a player. I would take Garrett over him, you know, in any spot in the draft. So I definitely think you were able probably to get maybe not the last impact pick there, but maybe the last pick that I felt really confident about.
To me, he was clearly the last very good receiver left on the board. So that's why I crossed my fingers, hoped he would drop, and I got a little bit lucky. You know, you're always in a draft, the other competitors, you always have to, you know, what are they thinking? What are they going to do? But I agree with you. To me, he was clearly the best last wide receiver who could make a difference for you.
Right. And in the fourth round, you came back and you found a guy who I do think could be a difference maker at the next level. I think a lot has to happen right. I like to call him the Jeff Janis of running backs because he is all athleticism. Daniel Lasko, running back for Cal. The exact same thing that happened with Garrett happened with me with Lasko in the fourth round. I'm looking, I'm waiting, I'm thinking, all right, you know what, there's a decent chance Lasko's going to go undrafted, so I'm definitely going to be able to get him at the 408. I had to make a pick for someone else who wasn't going to be around. I had to make a pick at the 405, and I was considering taking Lasko there, and I said, you know what, let me not just mail this pick in on someone else. I want to be able to make it, you know, for me, so I can kind of, you know, back myself up on it. I took Burbage with that 405 for another team and just assumed Lasko would get to me at the 408. And there it happened again. You took him at 407. I didn't even have a chance. So, you know, obviously the athleticism is off the charts. What, you know, do you think Lasko could ever turn into a running back one in the NFL?
I think there's a chance. Obviously, I would, if I was a betting man, the odds would be against him. However, what I decided entering the fourth round, I was going to take the best player remaining on my board, regardless of position. So as an example, let's say that Hunter Henry had dropped, the tight end, mm-hmm. who I do not think is a first round prospect. I would have taken a Hunter Henry there. If for some crazy reason no one wanted quarterbacks and Paxton Lynch had fallen there, I would have taken him. But that did not occur. So I said, let me look at my board. And out of the top 12 running backs and top 12 wide receivers, the only player remaining that I really felt comfortable with was Daniel Lasko. I have him at number 12. I also like the fact that he's a little bit of a different player than Perkins and Dixon. I think he's a little bit more of your classic NFL running back. Now, I had him 2 seasons ago on my college fantasy football team, and he was actually named the team MVP at the end of his junior season. Mm-hmm. And this is a team that had Goff at quarterback. So he had ended up rushing for 1,115 yards. He snatched 33 passes and he scored 14 times. So he had an incredible junior season and was definitely on my radar entering his senior year. And I had actually drafted him as my 4th running back on 2 of my CFB teams last year. However, unfortunately for my teams that had him and for the Golden Bears, Lasko just suffered a hip strain and ankle injury last year, and he mm-hmm. just could never really recall the magic of the season before. He only ended up carrying the ball 65 times, so it was very disappointing. So he kind of drops off most people's radars, but then I saw the East-West Shrine game, and he was the best player, the best runner on the field that day. And the reports were all positive. So I went back. He's 6 foot, 209 pounds. Wow, he's very impressive like about that. So then I went to watch some film. And the film told me, hey, here's a slasher who plants his feet and quickly heads north-south, which I like. He doesn't waste a lot of time. And he's not afraid to lower his shoulder pads into defenders. So I like it. He's a tough kid, and he's a versatile athlete and a good pass catcher. So I'm like, okay, now this is getting interesting. I've really got to think about Lasko a lot. But then he went to the combine, and he was good. He had a 4.46, actually very good. So you're like, wow, now his raw speed matches what I saw as a junior, and it seems to be healthy. But then the light bulb and all of the dots were connected. When he had his pro day, he ended up with a fantastic three-cone drill at a 6.8 and a 20-yard shuffle time of 4.13, which are both lower than they're lower than the bar that I would like running backs to show you for short yardage burst. So I'm like, hey, this kid is recovered. I've just got to look at that senior season as a component of the injury, and I think he's going to get drafted, and he's going to make a squad. He's the type of guy who I like to take a risk on, so I'm very happy drafting Daniel Lescow in the fourth round of the California Bears.
Right, absolutely. And again, this is a running theme with these late-round guys. He played some kick coverage at Cal, so again, it's something that he's comfortable enough doing that, you know, again, anything that earns a guy a little extra playing time on the field, a little time to see how the game speed changes at the pros, a little time to see how much bigger the opponents are at the pros. Those little things getting on the field in all those different fashions really help a guy out when it comes to, you know, for main fantasy purposes, for getting on the field as a running back or for coming on third downs to maybe line up in a slot and maybe kind of run across the field.
Absolutely. I mean, I definitely believe that he will be able to play some special teams for you, which will get him onto the squad and suit him up. And I like that. And then I think given the right scenario, he could come through, and we saw it last year with Thomas Rawls, Jeremy Langford, David Johnson. These late-round running backs, when they get a chance to perform, sometimes they can really surprise you.
Absolutely, and I think vision is such an interesting thing that running backs have to work on, and I think that's something that Lasko's really going to have to work on is, you know, slowing down for a second and finding the hole, and, you know, just little things like that will help really propel his game. And sometimes that just comes with time. But, you know, obviously you mentioned the eye-popping combine numbers, the 4.4 40, the 41.5-inch vertical, 135-inch broad jump, you know, his 11.3 long shuttle, the 60-yard shuttle. He redid the three-cone and the 20-yard shuttle at his pro day, improved on both of those times. That shows me this kid wants to go out there and compete, and not even against anyone else. He's competing against his own times here to say, I can do it better at my pro day. I can throw down faster times now than I did then. Just that shows confidence. Because a lot of times you see these guys who have a great combine and they don't have necessarily the same hunger to go out there and put up the, you know, similar or better numbers at their pro day. So seeing someone who already had the profile of a great athlete kind of maybe fixing things he wasn't so happy with at the combine, that speaks a lot to me.
I agree with you totally. I really like that he wanted to increase his draft stock, and he knew intuitively that somehow I had not done everything that I needed to do to increase my stock. So let me go out and do some more.
Absolutely. And that type of, you know, it's interesting when people say, you know, you have to project their attitude onto certain things. I feel like I can project that attitude, that winning mindset to try and, you know, just can I bump myself up 20 picks? That'll do it. That's all I need to know out of the guys on my team.
Totally agree with you.
Now, his landing spot, I feel like, is going to determine a lot of what he becomes. I know Chris and I had spoken about Green Bay, that's somewhere I think he could end up. That would be an interesting spot for him, especially since I think he's the Janus of backs. I would love it if they had the Janus of backs and the Janus of wide receivers, the actual Jeff Janus. I would love it if they just had all of these extra athletes on the field that they can't quite figure out what to do with. For me, that's kind of where I love him, is backing up Lacey and maybe taking over Starks. Is there anywhere in particular that pops out to you when you think of this guy?
I'm probably going to go to some places that seem par for the course. New England, because they love to take these kinds of athletic kids who have something that you can see on film that are underrated. the Raiders, and I totally the Raiders. I mean, he could be special now. He probably would share time in the beginning with Latavius Murray. Now, I like Murray. He had a disappointing season last year, and everything that I read from the Oakland camp and from online reporters and beat reporters, it looks like Oakland's going to get Murray some competition. I love that new Oakland offensive line. You could argue they're the best offensive line in the league, at worst in the top three. So I could see Lasko landing there and really having a lot of value. And I agree with you. I've been reading things that maybe Green Bay is interested in letting James Starks go. So I could see him being a nice backup to an Eddie Lacy. I have a feeling Green Bay is going to go with the pass catcher, though. So I don't think they'll get a Daniel Lasko. I think they're looking for a more explosive player on third downs, or, you know, maybe in catch-up situations when they're throwing the ball late in the game or late at before halftime. But I do think if he could end up in those types of scenarios, he could be very, very interesting. You know, so those are the three that I would love to see him in.
Absolutely. I think the Raiders were going to be the other one I mentioned. I also think, because I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I imagine it's pretty foregone now that the Rams are going to be looking for Todd Gurley's new backup with all the troubles, which would be putting it lightly, that we're seeing. I just blanked on his name. I almost called him Trey McBride. I can't come up with his name. Gurley's backup last year.
Oh, Trey Mason.
Trey Mason. There we go. I'm out here saying Trey McBride. Right, Trey Mason. We saw, you know, Trey Mason has enough problems with the law right now that they could almost certainly be in the new market, in the market for a new back there. So I think that would be another interesting spot. I, especially for these kind of later guys in my fantasy drafts, I like people who aren't asked to do too much going into it, because you can see things like an Antonio Andrews, where they're asked to do a lot, and now I think everyone's pretty convinced that he's not, capable of being an NFL running back. So I don't love guys being thrown, into the fire so quickly.
I agree with you, especially later round running backs.
Yeah, absolutely. And they say it's one of the easier transitions, but I would rather have a guy be on the bench and asked to carry it maybe, you know, I would say 50, 60 times in his rookie year. That's kind of the golden ratio for me.
I agree with you. I think that's a good ratio.
Before you go, I just wanted to run through the second half of your NFL mock draft up on footballdiehards.com. Again, we can find everything you do and you write there. You have your mock draft there. You have your dynasty rookie rankings. You have college football player rankings. You can find everything John does there, and he's one of my favorite reads. So I highly suggest bookmarking, you know, his authored page. But I just want to run through the mock draft, the back half of it now. I want to start with 17 and go down, and the reason I wanted to start specifically at 17 is because I really want to talk about Leonard Floyd for a minute. I love this guy out of Georgia. When you see him on the field at Georgia, I see, you know, he'd be able to do almost all the same things at the NFL level. I think the Falcons are a great spot for him. I would have loved him going to the Jets. I think he would make, I've tweeted this, I think, many times before. I think Floyd and Lorenzo Malden would make great kind of edge rushers for the Jets. They would shore up a position where we've really needed a difference maker for the past 4 or 5 years.
But he'd be a perfect Jet.
Fingers crossed. But if he ends up to the Falcons, I'm still loving him as an IDP guy. Certainly down there in that scheme. And we saw what they were able to do with later picks like Grady Jarrett down on the defensive line. I think just helping out that defensive talent in Atlanta is going to be huge.
I totally agree with you, and your analysis as an IDP stud. He does have that upside. other than Miles Jack, I think he's the best linebacker in this draft. And now we have to be concerned with these reports out of Miles Jack. I'm still watching this closely. I have Jack right now going number five to the Jaguars still. Mm-hmm. But we definitely have to keep watching that update. It's so hard right now, conflicting reports. Jack, to me, is either going to go off where we all expect within the top seven, or he's going to be a dramatic faller. Just not sure yet, because you can't – there's so many conflicting reports about what other team, what teams are thinking about his knee here. Yeah. But I love Floyd. I think he's a three-down backer. He can rush the quarterback. I think he has enough skills to cover at times. I just think for the Falcons, that what they need – you know, he's from Georgia. The Falcons play in Georgia. They play on turf. I think he could be special on turf at 6'5", 244. I agree with you. I love him. I think the Falcons could not bypass him if he's on the board.
Absolutely. And certainly a head coach like Dan Quinn could definitely, you know, make the most out of his talents.
Absolutely. I think a perfect coach, too, who wants to build that defense.
Right. So at 18, Colts grabbing Taylor Decker, the tackle out of Ohio State. They get another guy for their offensive line, which would really help them. The Bills grabbing Jerron Reed, defensive tackle out of Alabama. Certainly a Rex Ryan defender if there ever was one.
That, you know, if you watch Ryan, I think other than Mark Sanchez, that's a different story for a different day. He has never selected ever an offensive player. So sometimes when I see the Bills projected as an offensive player, I'm like, have you not studied?
It's just not what he does, yeah.
It's literally not what he does. I mean, maybe I'm totally wrong this year and he goes against his past, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't know, especially if Reed and Ragland are still on the board by the time they pick, one of them is going to the Bills. I can't imagine that anything else is happening there.
I completely 100% agree with that. I think those are the two of the players he would be targeting. They're like his style of player.
Exactly, yeah. He can form Ragland to lead his defense should he keep that job for years to come. Ragland, you had go 20 to the Jets. I also like that move. I'm in such an odd spot. I love the Jets. I don't know who I want them to take anymore. I was so convinced for a while it was Floyd. I also really like Ragland. I'm such a big fan of Will Jackson, the Houston cornerback who you have going next to the Redskins. I think he would be great on the Jets. He could kind of develop into that system. There are so many different ways they could go with their draft, and I think their first round pick is going to help people kind of project out what they're going to do after that. But if they stay at 20, because every now and then you hear rumors that they're trying to deal that maybe, you know, Wilkerson is going to be moved somewhere. I don't know that they still do that now that Harrison's gone, but I would say I'm happy with the Jets getting Ragland. I have no idea what they're going to do on draft day. I'm going to be excited no matter what. So it's just a big waiting game for me.
Now, you know, it's funny because Ragland has different perspectives. I like him. Obviously, I think believe he's a better first and second down linebacker than necessarily a third down linebacker covering in space. Mm-hmm. But I think with the Jets front four and with Todd Bowles as their coach, I think Ragland fits perfectly into that scheme. And my best friend's a Jet fan and I live in Connecticut, so I do see a lot of the Jets. And they need that plugger. You know, that front four can really disrupt the offensive line. But I believe the Jets need that middle backer to clean up the running back after the defensive line is destructive. I don't think the Jets need a real blitzer or a pass rusher as much as they need a run stuffer. You know, he's 6'1", 247 pounds. He can run. You know, he's pretty solid fundamentally, having come from Alabama. So I think he fits what Bowles is looking for. I agree with you. I think they'd rather have Floyd, because Floyd could just be perfect for Bowles, but I just don't see him falling past the Falcons. Now, and you know, I actually saw William Jackson live playing against the UConn Huskies here in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. Now, UConn does not have a wide receiver that could challenge him, but boy, is he an athlete.
It's fun to see, yeah.
Yeah, he is going to be a really good NFL player, I believe. And the Redskins, I believe they have enough offense. To me, they're going to address the wide receiver position later in the draft. There's depth here. You and I have talked a lot about it. There's wide receivers out here in the right system with the right coach could really make a difference. So I think the Redskins go defense here. And as we mentioned yesterday with Dallas, you've got to be able to shut the pass down in this NFC East. You've just got to get a corner who can play with the wide receivers. So I think the Redskins go Jackson.
Perfect. Now, the biggest kind of fantasy relevant picks out of the back half of this draft, the Texans, you have Josh Doctson going to them and Corey Coleman heading to the Vikings. I think those are interesting spots for both of them. I think Doctson could be a real solid number two. There are a lot of good vets to learn from in that Texans wide receiver room. And I feel like Doctson's the kind of guy that would have to take every bit of advice possible to become the best player he could on the field. So I love that spot. Coleman going to the Vikings, I think it'd be good. I think if we could uncork, Bridgewater's arm a little bit, I think Coleman could be a huge, asset to that Vikings passing attack.
Now, this is super interesting because some people claim Coleman are going to Texans. Some people like Doctson. I'm on the Doctson side of this argument. I think he's a little bit better overall than Coleman. I think he fits Bill O'Brien's offense better because I think he'd like to have a receiver who's more diverse in his ability to run routes and get open. And I believe Doctson right now is a little bit more mature as a route runner. And I think across from DeAndre Hopkins and with Lamar Miller and Brock Osweiler, this might be a perfect dynasty spot. I mean, you could make a case that Josh Doctson, if he lands with the Texans, could be the second overall pick in all dynasty rookie mock drafts, only behind Ezekiel Elliott. I love Doctson landing here. I have him ranked higher than Coleman going into the draft, and I especially love him going to the Texans. I think Houston has a special offense here next year. I think fantasy fans have to really look at what the Texans are doing down there in Houston. Now, Coleman, this will be interesting from a fantasy standpoint. He's still my third receiver on the board. I'm not in love with, obviously, the Minnesota passing game, but I do think they're looking for this type of player to line up next to Stephon Diggs. Now, I agree with you. We have to see if Teddy Bridgewater can grow and uncork that arm that we saw at Louisville. But why I like Coleman here, he might actually become a value in dynasty leagues. I think the narrative will be that Teddy Bridgewater cannot get the ball deep. And Corey Coleman's tremendous skill, that might be the best available, is he can hit the home run. So I think the narrative will be that Corey Coleman will not be able to catch a pass deep down the field from Teddy Bridgewater. And if that's the narrative, I could see Coleman falling in dynasty drafts. But the key word there is dynasty. You still have to take the talent and hope that Bridgewater or the Vikings offensive system changes and grows. And in 3 years, Coleman could easily be in the top three receivers production-wise for fantasy owners. So I think Coleman could be a value if he ends up with Minnesota in fantasy football leagues and dynasty leagues.
Absolutely. I think you're right. The Vikings are chasing that game-breaking talent that they thought they were getting for a little bit with Charles Johnson, and then they chased it a little more with Mike Wallace, and I think they can get the real deal in Corey Coleman.
I agree totally.
All right, so that's it. Mostly it's defensive players, but I want to run through the rest of it. You have a Sean Robinson, Alabama D tackle, going to the Bengals at 24. Certainly another guy on that line that they can kind of throw at, you know, the opposing offenses. I love that pick. I think that makes them really deep on that offensive line. It adds a ton of talent in the middle for them. That's a home run for me.
I agree. When I did the draft, I was amazed. I'm like, wow, he's falling, but I don't see a perfect fit. He's clearly a talent, and the Bengals are very astute in the first round, and I believe Marvin Lewis would love to get a kid like A'shaun Robinson on that defensive line.
Absolutely. Von Bell to the Steelers. He would be another great Steeler safety if everything could go right.
I like Von Bell a lot, and they need a corner, but the top five corners are off the board, which I think would make the Steelers a little bit, you know, I think they really want that corner, but they're not there. So I think they go safety because they do need secondary help.
Absolutely. From there, you have the Seahawks adding to their offensive line, which is desperately needed. Cody Whitehair out of Kansas State. You have the Packers adding Kamali Correa, State linebacker.
Yep.
Chiefs adding Kevin Dodd out of Clemson. I think that would be incredible, too. You can pair up Dodd, and he can kind of rush the edge a little bit from you know, his hand in the ground as opposed to, you know, Justin Houston. Yeah. He'd be another one. It would just be, you know, life is going to be rough on any quarterback playing on the West Coast. Just every defense on the west half of the nation is incredible. I wouldn't want to be a quarterback in the NFC or the AFC.
You know, it's interesting because, yeah, when you see what the Seahawks have done and then you see what Denver has done, there are some nasty defenses among those eight clubs out in the West. I agree. They hit, they have speed, and they play very good. So I think and the Chiefs losing Justin Houston, I think, is one of the underrated stories in this offseason. I mean, I'm a Bronco fan, so I've seen the Chiefs a ton. Their defense is nasty, and Houston gets after people. Losing him, I really do believe the Chiefs need a player who can rush the quarterback to replace him. And I don't think enough people are really writing or discussing it yet. And I rode the Chiefs' defense down the year in DFS and in fantasy football. They had played some great defense the second half of the season. And losing Houston is a big chess piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that they're definitely, it's going to be probably a lot of scheme to fix that. But
yes.
So, you know, after that, Ryan Kelly heading to the Cardinals, the center out of Alabama. Noah Spence heading to the Panthers, the Eastern Kentucky defensive end. I think that is another home run pick for them. I think that's the rich getting richer on defense. And Andrew Billings out of Baylor heading to the Broncos. They're able to kind of plug what they lost with Malik Jackson leaving.
That hurts the Broncos a lot. I really like Malik Jackson. He was a really good disruptive player. Now, I saw Andrew Billings a lot at Baylor because I had so many Baylor offensive players on my fantasy teams. Mm-hmm. And I believe he caught a touchdown as a tight end last year.
Yes.
In one game. He is an athlete. He's a big body. I think he will be best in a rotation. I don't think he can do 55 snaps on the defense, but I think he could give you 35 really productive snaps, and you've got to replace Malik Jackson, in my opinion. So I do think Billings could be a good player for the Broncos this late in the draft.
Absolutely. I think if they don't do it in round one, they're definitely doing it in round two. They're getting some other body for that defensive line because they need it. I feel like the whole reason they locked up Wolf before the season was over was because they knew that Malik Jackson was going to go. He was the prime, you know, just getting money thrown at him guy. So,
absolutely. I mean, Elway's been pretty good with the salary cap. So I agree. He had made a determination that Wolf was going to be the guy they kept, signed him. They actually got a value when you consider how much Malik Jackson got on the open market. So, and I love Derek Wolfe. He's a great disruptive force. He's a very good defensive tackle. So, but now you just got to get someone else who can play with him in that front four.
Absolutely. Well, there we go. We've covered a dynasty mock draft. We've covered players who aren't going in dynasty drafts. We've covered the fourth round of them. We've covered the NFL draft. This is really as much as anyone could expect out of two episodes on a podcast.
I think so, and I've had the best time the last two nights. It has been an incredible pleasure, Andrew, to be able to record with you and talk fantasy football, specifically Dynasty, but I even also love doing the draft and looking at defensive players, and it's just all so much fun. It's April 18th and 19th, and here we are, and hoping that the fans and the diehards out there get to enjoy our podcast.
Absolutely, and definitely, I gotta get you on after the NFL draft for some reactions to some of these picks.
It'll be my pleasure.
Absolutely, I hope everyone is following you on Twitter at GridironSkull91, which I it's one of those things, until I went on your page, you've just always been the gridiron scholar to me. So when I just saw the SCHOL 91, I feel like I have to mention that every time.
Thank you.
And again, they can find everything you do over at footballdiehards.com. I have that author page saved in a bookmark. I think everyone should. You're definitely one of the smartest minds working now.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind. I appreciate that a lot.
Absolutely. And, you know, everyone can follow me on Twitter at @the_ATJ. You can get all my writings and the podcast on thefantasyforce.com. Make sure you subscribe to the Fantasy Force podcast on iTunes. While you're there, you can leave a rating and a review. Really helps kind of craft the show into what everybody wants it to be. And I appreciate anyone who takes the time to do it. John, I had a great time with you. And, you know, until next time.
Excellent, Andrew. We'll talk soon. I really appreciate it.
Peace.